Okay. Welcome everybody to the Framework of Interpretation Working Group. I think we do have an observer in the room, so perhaps it's appropriate that we go round the table and introduce ourselves, and then to the bridge to see if anyone's online. So can we start from my right?
Malcolm Boyle.uk.
Kim Davies, I can start.
Stephen Derhay.as.
Nigel Roberts.gg.
Patricia Pavlete,
NickChile. Oh, Keith Davidson.nz.
Ernie Todd, Terry South Contractor, FOI.
Becky Burr.us.
Ivan Lisa.na.
Bart Bolsminko, I can start.
Christina Nordstrom, I can start.
Would you like to identify yourself for the record?
I'm Mr. Williamson from the Namibian government.
And I think, is there anyone online? No?
Can I just remind, this is Christina, can I remind everybody to say their names before they speak?
Thank you, Christina. And Christina, do you have the apologies?
I have apologies from Bill Samick and Cheryl Langdonor.
And I receive apologies from Frank Munch, who's not here. Any other apologies? Okay. Is Adobe Connect not working? Is Adobe Connect not working?
You have to go to the one on the schedule.
It's not the usual Adobe Connect. It's you have to pick it up off the CTNSO meeting schedule.
No, the item schedule, the full item schedule.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Thanks, Christina. Okay, we have no agenda and no meeting report of the last meeting because your chair is useless, slack and idle. So I wondered if I could propose to you we have an agenda of or if we could leave the meeting report from 4th of July till the next meeting because it hasn't been circulated, and therefore if we could have a working agenda today of approving the progress report that was published, talking a little bit about the GAC and where we are with the GAC, and then the topic of revocation and anything arising out of that. And perhaps since it's quite a light agenda today, we might try and concentrate on the square bracket text that we still have, where we talk about the IONA contractor or the IONA function and so on, and try and see if we can find a way forward through that. And then final item on the agenda, the way forward and the meeting schedule from here to Buenos Aires. So I'll invite any bashing on that agenda. Is there anything that we want to add, subtract, delete? We're happy? Excellent. So the progress report was not fully approved by the working group, but it was in your hands before it was published everywhere, and it seemed to me a reasonable opportunity that was given for anyone to comment, and there were no comments. So can we record it as being a document of the working group rather than my document? No exception to that. Thank you. And so we'll move on to the next agenda item, which is the GAC interactions. I think we had a friendly discourse in the joint session between the GAC and the CCNSO on Tuesday, and I think the GAC appears to have got through its other priorities now, and because this is the first time we've had that joint meeting for several ICANN meetings, it seems they are ready to re-engage on all levels with the work of the CCNSO, including our working group. So I did take the liberty of meeting with Fiona Alexander to make sure the USG was not distracted on this on the FOI work. Suzanne appears to be back and fully engaging, and when I get back to New Zealand I will be talking to Frank because he is the lead for the GAC on this working group. So I think we can get back on track. Nigel?
Yeah, I just wanted to comment that I was in the meeting on Tuesday and I was pleased to note how relatively comfortable the GAC assembled appeared to be with the work to date that's been and the progress that's been published and so on. Now, it may be that some of them not heard about it until that very minute, but many of them have heard of what we've been doing for a number of months and even years, so I'm pleased to see there wasn't any controversy growing.
Well, not yet, anyway, but I think what we have, or the current situation, is that we have the consent document agreed between the CCNSO and the GAC, although the GAC reserving its position to see the entire framework before they get their final approval. We've been through the round of open consultations on the SIP document. They've provided input. We've responded to their input, and they haven't responded to our response. So we need to follow up to see if we can put any remaining issues on SIP to bed. It is potentially possible that we will have a revocation document in their hands prior to Buenos Aires. So I think it is a very appropriate time that we can actually now start to think about the framework in its entirety and final approval from the GAC. So any other aspects in terms of the GAC? I mean, maybe it's an idea for individuals who are engaged with their GAC colleagues to start reminding them of their obligations or invite their discussion so that you can smooth any differences of opinion with them and so on, so that we can have a better informed GAC that isn't likely to be concerned with any aspect. Okay, no, I'm not seeing any dissent, so I'm assuming everyone's reasonably happy with that. Can we visit the topic of revocation? Is there anything that you want to raise or discuss, Benning? Is there anything from the working group members in terms of the analysis document version 10? Do you see as the process going forward, Benny?
Just confirm, my understanding was we had achieved consensus or rather unanimous consensus on that. Am I correct with that? On the document with the exception of the square brackets?
Yes, no one's registered with me an objection. There appears to be unanimous agreement from the working group over the current text. So.
I think there was one issue with regards to predating names. Has that been solved to your satisfaction? I think Martin Boyle raised it recently. Just to clarify that domains established before 1951 may or may not, but not automatically fall under 1591. It has just been solved to your satisfaction. I just don't want this to linger. I want to have it clear in the meeting.
Would you like to comment, Matt?
Thanks. Neither to my satisfaction nor my dissatisfaction. It seems to me to be something for others to take forward. I do have a certain question in my mind that after 20 years we have of RFC 1591, we are still having people who are sort of throwing into question as to whether RSC 1591 is the basis on which they work, but as I say, I'm not going to object one way or another to it. I'm just going to remain entirely neutral, and if others want to then question, then that is entirely up to them. Thank you.
To respond and to the open nature of our progress, Martin has raised some issues which I think are quite pertinent and relevant to the final framework that I think are worth exploring and teasing out a little more. And I think Becky, Bernie and I and Martin might discuss that through. But remember, we are dealing with what is the analysis document, and we are still working on revocation as the actual document that will go through as a chapter to the framework. So I think if there's anything that comes from those discussions that's substantial that we should revisit, then I think we'll, you know, I'll take the liberty to do that at the appropriate time. But I think, you know, there are aspects that are quite interesting, so I think they deserve some exploration, and perhaps, you know, it might be better offline than online, but, you know, anything that is pertinent will come back to the working group. Martin?
Yeah, as I said, when I raised those questions, deliberately raised off-list rather than on, because I was saying quite clearly that I was not going to object to the consensus. The purpose of raising questions, though, is to make sure that we do start thinking about what the answers are when somebody else raises those questions. I've had sort of a few indications coming through to me as to what some of those answers are. But if we just go straight ahead, somebody's going to ask those questions sooner or later. It's best that we have actually thought about it. And certainly I would feel more comfortable when I'm hit over the head on it, that I actually understand what the implications of what we've said are and why we've got there. Thank you.
Thank you. And so while it's been a very tortuous route to get us to this point, I'm really delighted that we have been able to achieve this unanimous position. It's been the way this working group and the previous delegations, three delegations working group, has chosen to work, that rather than just achieving consensus to get the unanimous support of the group. So I think it is nice to go forward with that, rather than continuing to worry about what one person or a couple of people might think about an issue and so on, or that's in dispute. So it's nice to have resolution. Martin?
Yes, it's one thing did cross my mind in this exchange after our last meeting, was that we seem to be ignoring our agreed method of working, which was that substantive changes to text should go through two readings. Now, I think that's actually a bit pedantic, because the same people who are here for this second reading have already indicated that the consensus is there. But I would just like to sort of flag to you, Chair, that the outstanding consensus that was reached 2 weeks ago was a milestone, but there ought to have been a, and we will finalise this text here as our second reading. But I think that's history, and again, I think it's pedantic, and we've actually got there, and so probably easiest just to recognise that the text is there agree that there is no desire to change that text from this meeting, because I don't think there is.
Well, I gave the invitation for any discussion on the document, and so not having received any invitation, I think we've essentially got to that point. So So not seeing any objection, I think we can firmly put it to bed as an agreed document of the working group, and I'm seeing thumbs up. So, so Bernie, what do you propose we, what's our plan going forwards?
Thank you, sir. Looking at the calendar, we've got the November Buenos Aires meeting is the next one. So we have to sort of structure our timing to take advantage of that, because the GAC will only formally discuss documents that are provided to them about a month ahead of the actual meeting, which would mean we need to get something out by mid-October, that is the formal document. If you look at the general schedule, given this was just a working document, we've got to structure this so that we've got a public consultation document sort of mid-October. All right? July is done for all intents and purposes by the time we get back. So that leaves August, September, and 2 weeks in October, and we probably need a week just to do the formalities, et cetera. So I think we would try to, Becky and I have committed to working on this so that we get a draft of the final document to the working group for the end of August, 1 week before our meeting, and that I've been looking at the schedule with Keith, that we restart our meetings on the 29th, Keith? 29th of August. So that would give everyone except us a break here, and hopefully that will give us 4 meetings to go through the document, make sure we're all comfortable with it, and allow staff to get it ready for a public consultation and therefore available to the GAC for consideration in Buenos Aires.
Four calls, not four meetings. Four calls, not four meetings.
I'm just wondering whether we can't do this soon. I mean, I thought we'd actually got to the stage where we're almost done apart from the square bracketed text. Well, I'm missing something.
Well, between the document we've got and reintegrating that, and as Becky has said, we've always wanted to do one final good comb through. I think it's going to take a couple of weeks. I think regardless of anything else, we will have a meeting at the end of August with a draft document. If we're all happy with it and it's done, great. But I'm allowing for the reality that we may have some discussion. So I don't want the working group to feel pressed. We've always taken the time it takes to get a document that everyone is comfortable, and we'll keep working like that.
As long as we're aiming to do what you suggested in that call, that meeting at the end of next month, then I'm happy with that.
So we'll call it the third and final reading.
So that's my plan, sir.
Thanks, Benny. I'm trying to put the schedule up on screen, but I think it might be easier if I throw it straight to the list now, and if we could, during the course of the rest of the meeting, each have a look at the schedule. I'm proposing... Oh, there we go. So if I blow that up to full size and give it a bit of size on there... I can't really blow that up, can I? In an email.
Keith, this is Christine. I'm sorry to interrupt. I just wanted to note for the record that I forgot to mention an apology from Desiree Milosevic.
Okay.
So apologies for that.
Okay. So apologies for missing an apology. So noted. Thank you. So can everyone see that? I'll also post that round by email very shortly, but that, I think, would give us a schedule of probably too many meetings. If Bernie's confident we can get through in 4, we should be able to get through in 5, so that gives us one more. and so that's really picking up where we've left off in our time circuit, and then just realising that in the end of September and October, we all move through our transitions from summertime and wintertime and so on. So there are adjustments to bring it back into reasonable sync for us all. And then meeting again at Buenos Aires. So everyone reasonably happy? Martin?
Yes, I would note that the 24th of October
falls bang in the middle of the IGF week. You chair are active. You might like to consider that particular meeting, but then with luck we won't even need it. So
yes, UTC 400 in Bali. I wonder what time that is. Okay, well noted. Anyway, let's make it, if necessary, an emergency meeting and try and deal with the other dates and times.
I would look at the times, 4 o'clock when you're in a week of meetings. I think 4 o'clock in the morning is not the right thing. Where is that meeting?
It's in Bali, and so that'll be...
So that's not an issue for you then?
It'll be at least 8 hours off 4 a.m.
So that's for you not a problem. You just skip out of one of these meetings then if necessary.
Well, yes, but it might be one of those opportunities with several people there that we could get together and have a single room to meet in and so on. But I guess there are a lot of last-minute distractions at an IGF as well. Nigel?
Yeah, I'm just interested as to why the particular time shift as the world transitions into summer and winter time. Because what happens is that we get a two-hour difference between ourselves that was not there previously, or we close the two-hour gap, I forget which it is. Why are we shifting by 1 hour UTC? It doesn't make any sense to me.
I think it's mostly to be kinder to those of us who have to be on every call, which is...
But that's the principle year-round.
Yes, but the people who we've always worked on the basis of we don't agree anything at a single meeting, so you can always skip that terrible meeting in your horrible time zone, but Kim and Bernie and Becky and I need to be on very much every call, so it's to be kinder on us, if you like.
I would propose we leave it as the chair proposed, Nigel.
I'm not suggesting change.
Let's move on. This is not helping us.
Thank you. Okay. Well spotted. Thanks, Martin, for noticing that it is. So I've noted there that it's IGF week, and if we we'll make it only the meeting date if we're absolutely stuck. So within that, do we want to pick up on the issue of the square brackets? Bernie, do you want to start a discussion on that?
Bernie Turcotte. Yes, sir. Thank you. I'll find the actual. Currently, we are using square brackets IANA contractor. And this arose, if I remember well, from Eberhard's discussion, and it's been called various things, IANA, the IANA functions contractor, and the latest incarnation of the square brackets is the IANA contractor, and we said we would get back to it, which is why it's in a square bracket. And so... as we rewrite the text, it would probably be useful if we could take out the square brackets and have some sort of understanding. I think you had some thoughts on this, Jeff?
No, I don't particularly. I think we had used in the text a bunch of different things. I think, Eberhard, you had a particular view on what the right way of doing this, because sometimes we refer to it as IANA, and as I recall, that's what you were objecting to.
Not just me. IANA is a function performed by somebody. It's at least that's what it is now. So I felt because the IANA is not staff, it's a function, but individuals act, so you can't address the function when individuals act, so it may be better to give it the correct name. And I think the U.S. government has also looked at that in passing, because they chose not to address it as IANA, but they gave it a particular IANA functions manager or the contractor or something. And therefore, I propose that we should look at it and use perhaps the same wording that the U.S. government uses for the time being, because the wording they have chosen actually also makes sense for a change.
I think Bernie's right on that. Could we ask him for his clarification, and then I have Martin and Nigel.
So, excuse me. My perhaps objection is a strong word, but I recommend against the use of the word contractor, in the sense that I think our goal here is to create a document that's as timeless as possible, and contractor aligns it to a specific model of oversight for IANA that we're not certain will be permanent, may well be, may not be, but I think it's something that we can avoid in terms of locking in a particular contract model to how the IANA is operated. I think I'll double check, but I think the term of art that the MTA uses is IANA functions operator. So that no. So okay, maybe it was the previous contract that used that term. But you know, my sense is if we can find terminology, I accept the point that IANA itself is not an entity, and it's something we're mindful to avoid in when we're writing as well. You know, my personal preference is to upfront state IANA means, and then your you know, definition of what IANA is, and then just use IANA for simplicity. But I accept that that might not be a shared view. But I would suggest avoiding the word contractor if at all possible.
Yeah, I've got Martin, then Nigel, then Patricio, then Abahat.
Certainly I would support the conclusion of the IANA as a function, and I think at least once, if we then say here and after known as actually having the IANA functions specifically referred to. My own personal feeling is that IANA function contractor is the best way of dealing with it, because that is in fact the terminology throughout, that it is the IANA functions that are referred to in the statements of work. Picking up on Kim's point, I actually feel very negative about moving away from the existing terminology. The existing terminology in the statements of work throughout is the contractor. And that is the framework in which we're working. If it changes subsequently, then we can affect that change at that stage. But the idea of having something that doesn't match risks throwing a confusion into it as to whether we are referring to the same animal when we're saying the IANA functions operator and the IANA functions contractor. So IANA functions contractor at least once in the document. We can then say hereinafter known as the contractor, but for saving two words in a document this long, I really don't see there's any point in it. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. What about, I think there are a couple of occasions in our work that IANA database, you know, the actual database itself is referred to, so there's a third term about there just for us to contemplate. You want to continue with that point?
Well, yeah, if I can actually just respond to that. I think when you're doing that, you again go to the statements of work and make sure you're using consistent language, because again, you risk having confusion. Because my recollection, yes, it's a root zone file that is referred to. And there are other documents that refer to keeping the information up to date. And again, I think specifically we should be looking directly at those words to make sure that we've got a clarity of understanding that when we're all gone,
yeah.
people will still understand what it meant.
It's the colour and depth that we're seeking, and so the glossary looks like it will contain at least three terms relating to IANA. So back to the speaking order, Nigel and Patricia Lignetta.
Well, first of all, before I make my substantive point, which we've heard on the calls before, which is where we got bogged down previously, I will say that if we are now arguing over one term and one word and the angels on the head of the pin, we must have made some good progress. But I'm with Kim on this, and I'm actually strongly with Kim on this, and I think that while for every reason that Martin has given but applied differently, we are making in danger of making a fundamental mistake of interpretation here. The document that we're interpreting uses a specific term. Just because in today's environment we know it when we see it, and the IANA and what we call the IANA functions contractor are one and the same thing, apparently, or maybe the functions contractor is the body that happens to be doing the IANA function. The original document refers to IANA. IANA was originally an individual. There is legal precedent which actually says at one particular point in time it was four individuals in a kind of unincorporated partnership. I can dig that out if need be. The point is, let's not focus too much on the effect of this to some extent is minor, but the effect on the rigorousness of our work is major. In that we have started out by, as Martin says, we've got a statement of work, we've defined our own statement of work, and then we're redefining a 20-year-old document in the basis of its dependent on the statement of work written last year. I'm not sure how we come out of this, but as I say, I'm with Kim, and I'm strongly with Kim on this.
Okay. Patricia?
I would prefer to use just a single word, IANA, because that's the word that the RFC 1591 uses, and also because if we make explicit use of the word contractor, that reflects only the current situation and not some possible future different situation that could emerge. If we add a precision in the glossary or a footnote saying that at the current time this function is, the IANA function is performed on the contract, that would be sufficient for people now to understand exactly what we're saying, and that one definition could be changed in the future if the IANA situation changes.
Ms. Patricia,
I have no particular preference for what we write, but we cannot write IANA. I cannot live with that, because it is confusing to people who don't read these documents, and it doesn't give us enough granularity that we need, and we must find, and if it was so, the U.S. government would have used that word. Now, I'm not saying we must use the U.S. government's word, but we must use something that describes it as it is at this point in time. And to just write IANA just makes it too confusing.
Personally, I feel if you're compiling a glossary and you have a description of what an acronym might mean, then using the acronym is entirely appropriate, I would have thought. But, you know. Okay, there's a range of opinions. We're not going to settle this in a moment, I think. But, how vigorously do we want to debate this point? Is there any level of compromise that we can reach that everyone can live with? Nigel, are you from?
Well, I'm not proposing a way forward, but I think we want to debate it vigorously and swiftly, because we need to get over the square bracketed issue. I can't remember if there are other text that we have to go through in square brackets, or was this it?
That is it. In the revocation analysis, there may be some square brackets back in. No, there can't be anything else. Can no.
I mean, I'm sure it's not impossible to find a way forward. And again, to some extent, at the end of the day, no matter what we say, if somebody else was determining that all this ab initio, whatever term we use is going to be irrelevant. The reality of the interpretation is going to be how it's interpreted in due course. But I still come back to the original thing. I don't believe we can start talking about RFC 5091 says that the IANA function contractor does this, when it clearly doesn't. It says IANA, whatever it is, was, and has been in the meantime. So we just need to find some way forward that
yeah, that's interesting. That's interesting, and I think the comments earlier about IANA being one person or some collaboration, there's no doubt in my mind that 1591 was trying to engender the concept of the IANA, which is not a person or a group of individuals or necessarily an organisation. It is a statement of authority, if you like. I feel that's quite a strong kind of comment to always or quite consistently refer to the IANA. So, you know, to me, in my mind, you know, having the IANA in some ways isn't a bad description of what we could then, under glossary terms, say, for the purpose of consistency, we're using the old terminology and we understand it to mean this.
I mean, I take Everhart's point. I mean, can we not define this as being a role? Which clearly it was. It's a role. It was a role originally carried out by Dr. Postel, then by the four people who were named in that particular court case, and subsequently by ICANN without a contract, interestingly enough. There was an intermediate stage between 2000 and 2000, whenever it was that the first IANA contract was issued. Why can't we define IANA as a role and then say there is a thing called the Foreign Contractor who happens to be ICANN? Perhaps that's a way forward.
I just have a problem with using a name that is confusingly similar. And we all know that many people don't read these documents thoroughly, and I want to be as precise as possible.
But I think Nigel's suggesting we're going to use two terms to differentiate or isolate the ambiguity around a single term, which I think is...
Yeah, but we have always done this. We have said the IANA function and the functions manager. We've always differentiated between that in our work.
But it's to come back to a logical statement in our documentation. Martin, any further thoughts?
I think, and I hear what Nigel says, and I've just called up RFC 1591, and right the way through that document, it does refer to the IANA, so he's perfectly right there. However, I think we have actually got to recognise, at least somewhere in the document, that what we're looking at is currently the people who are under contract within the statements of work, and therefore at least somewhere in the document, as I said earlier, we need to have a reference to the current framework in which it is doing. That could be in a definition which you then, you could say the IANA and then the definition as to what we are seeing as being the IANA. And then we have no problems subsequently in dealing with it. I still think that because the current situation is contract, we need to make sure that it is seen as the current contractor, or subsequent operator could be included to make it, to give it a lifetime guarantee. But somewhere in the document, I think we need to have that clarity of understanding that we have got that reference back to the obligations on the ICANN role as the contractor that include or that are covered in the statements of work because of things like accountability and blah 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 right way through, which I think are actually really useful things to make sure that we all are aware that they're in the background, even though they do not directly affect this document. So that's why I do attach a lot of attention to the statements of work that the current contract is based around. Thanks.
Okay, thanks, Martin. And I don't know whether I should feel insulted that you needed to go and check RSP 1591 and not take my work.
I am joking for the record. Stephen, and then Ben.
All we're dealing with here is a tag in the body of the document and a glossary definition. And if we just work on the glossary definition here, can we not just get this sorted here and now and be done with it?
I'm quite relaxed about the concept of putting up some draft text and working and manipulating and so on. I mean, we do have another 2 hours of meeting, and it could be quite useful to use that time, or some of that time, to actually bash some text. I've got Bernie, then Nigel. Ben.
Thank you, sir. Bernie Turcotte. I hear both sides, and so as far as I can understand it, the two things we've got right now are define it once in the documents and just keep using IANA, or the Eberhard point of the tag IANA itself is confusing because of things. Could we go halfway and sort of define it properly, and whenever we use IANA, we have an asterisk?
Well, I think, we've always said that our glossary will be, the place where you'll go to define or see the definition of the term. So I don't think you need to asterisk it. If we're saying IANA or the IANA, it will have a specific meaning as the glossary contains.
Excuse me. I'm actually quite comfortable with Martin's going with the definition somewhere in the document. I don't think we can get away with the fact that we're interpreting a particular policy, and that particular policy uses particular words. We can't say it should say something different and then interpret those words. What we can do is interpret what in current situation we would take it to mean. I'm just wondering semantically, throughout the document, our document, where the expression the IANA function would not serve rather than the IANA function contractor. Because contractor makes it very specific to the current contractual situation. Eberhard says, quite correctly, IANA is a function or a role. When we currently say IANA, can we not say the IANA role, the IANA function? And then in some circumstances, when you're specifically referring to ICANN, as in ICANN is the current contractor or the current performer of that role, then maybe you'd need to write it slightly differently. But I'm not sure that we need to keep saying RSC 5091 says the IANA function contractor this, because it doesn't.
Well, it is conceivable that there may be several IANA functions contractors in the future. It may be possible that the CCTLD community is administered by one IANA contract and the GTLD is by another and the IP addressing by another and so on. So, we might need to be more specific as well. And that's one of the problems of future-proofing, But I think we're getting somewhere. Eberhard.
We've just looked at the request for proposal before the contract was awarded. The U.S. government is of the has the view that John Postel performed his function on the Terranaut contract, which is clearly not correct, but that's their view. In other words, it has always been a contract awarded by the U.S. government to an individual who performed to an individual and now to an entity who performed this function. I just want to be precise, because people need to be held accountable for their actions if something goes wrong. And I want to be, since we interpret what we feel FFC1591 to mean, I am not going to die in the ditch on the word contractor, but authority is function. It's not. We need to define it as an individual entity who performs that function. What words we use, I don't care. As long as we agree on that principle, I don't care whether it's the function manager, contractor, XYZ. But I want to be precise that we not refer to... IANA can have several meanings. So when we mean the entity performing this function, we should clearly make it in the document throughout, consistently you refer to this token or label that we currently in the glossary assign to it. This is separate from the function this contractor performs, and we should be, and I feel we should be precise on this.
Okay, thanks. I've got Bernie. But just before, going back to, you raise an interesting historical point in the Terranaut contract or agreement, which was a loose agreement, I think, rather than a contractual thing. Did it actually refer to the establishment of the authority of IANA, or did Postel assert IANA as the authority?
I have actually read the Terranaut contract. I've dug it up and read it. It makes no reference to it. It refers to its funding for a development of a large-scale network, and they use that funding to administer the then-fledgling Internet. And that's exactly what happened. And now the U.S. government, of course, we know all the political circumstances with ITU and whatever, they exerted authority. I personally think this is a very good thing that the U.S. government does it, and it's not done by the ITU or Iran, for example, or Belzebub. But be that as it may, that's the fact. We're not changing this. The U.S. government now refers to this even in the request of proposal as contractor. I do not think we have to refer to it as a contractor, but we have to... My point is, we must be precise on when we differentiate between the entity performing the function and the function itself.
I think we're agreed on that point. I've got Becky, Bernie, then Nigel. So.
Everhard is right, there is no reference to it. And the situation is further complicated by the fact that there is at least a very good argument that some of the IANA functions, some of the things that the IANA did and maybe does were not part of the Terranaut contract. So that the whole RFC editing thing. So the IANA functions may and I think probably does consist of the things that were being done under the Terranaut contract and then the whole RFC editing thing. Sorry to complicate this, but that's a fact.
It was a funding vehicle, basically.
Okay, but the question remains in my mind then that Postel was asserting IANA as an authority without a permission, but because it wasn't rejected by anyone, it was accepted as an authoritative situation. So going back to speaking order, Bernie, Nigel.
Well, this is just an aside. It helps to have some people who remember various little snippets. And one of the snippets I remember is in 1996, a few months before he passed away, the IANA webpage, which used to be on isi.org/IANA, and not even have its own domain name, asserted that the IANA's authority came from the Internet Society. It actually asserted it was chartered by ISOC. Do you remember that?
Yeah. That was within 12 months of the Internet Society starting.
No, it was 1998.
98?
No. I mean, if you were to further this to an illogical end, it would mean that the IANA function is not a property of John's estate. We don't want to go there. I mean, just think it through. In the end, the bottom line is the U.S. government asserts this as a function that it allocated by contract to Postel or to ISI. Whether this is right or wrong is another issue. De facto it is. They have asserted it now by another contract to another entity and basically trying to talk it away will not work. They've got nuclear weapons, they listen to our communication, they do whatever they want, and they will keep this. But for our intent and purpose, for our brief, I think it is important in some other way to separate between the function itself and the entity performing this function. And what name we're going to use, I think I'm saying it now for the third time, what name we're going to use, whether we call it contractor or whatever, that I don't have a problem with.
Okay. Ben.
What struck me when I was listening to this is I understand what Eberhard is saying. When we're referring to the IANA contractor as is referred to in the U.S. contract, yes, we should use the word the IANA contractor or the contractor as the U.S. government does. I agree with that. However, what we're doing, and in any documents where we want to refer to that is probably the right term because that's the one the U.S. government uses. But what we're doing, as Nigel pointed out, is interpreting 1591. And what 1591 says, and we've been very specific that we try not to invent new terms, we try not to recreate history, it says, I am. I mean, one of the things we've got, from, and I just think it's useful if we read it, from Section 4, significantly interested parties in the domain should agree that designated managers the appropriate party. The IANA tries to have any contending parties reach agreement amongst themselves and generally takes no action. And it just keeps referring to the IANA.
Yeah, I'll tell you exactly what he meant in those phrases. He meant himself.
Some derived authority to empower Postel and others resulted in this term of art, and subsequently the U.S. government have created it into its real authority. So, it's progressed.
Sorry, not subsequently. The U.S. government does not say they did it subsequently. They said they did it before he did it.
Okay.
No, they subsequently said they did.
Sorry for it. I'm not arguing with the U.S. government. Sorry, can we remember when we are speaking, particularly if I haven't used your name to introduce you as a speaker, then for the record you do need to use your name. Patricio.
Yeah. I think that the use that I favor of the word IANA in the document is consistent with what is done in many other places. If you look at the country's constitution, for instance, it speaks about the president and what the president can do and so and so. Of course, that's a function that's performed by a person, but it doesn't... So one could argue that what it should say was the person performing the role of president should do this or that. And of course that would be very cumbersome, but everybody understands when it says the president, it means that. And if necessary, it could say that in just one place and then use the word president everywhere else. I think that the same thing, the analog thing is what I favor for our document and the word IANA.
Yes, we have a term in New Zealand which refers to the Crown, and all our law is based on the Crown verses, and we understand exactly that term means Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth II, Queen of New Zealand, the people and the government of New Zealand as a collective thing. So, you know, there's a very clear understanding of what a term like that may mean, and I have a feeling that we're actually arguing about the same thing, that we actually do have a very clear understanding of what the IANA means, and we just, to say to beat it into something else is probably not that appropriate. Anyway, Emma.
Patricia's example is wrong. If you what he should have said is judiciary, executive, and what is the third branch? Legislative. That's a function. It's performed by parliament. It's performed by the government. It's performed by justices. I don't want to go into too much detail. I just want to be precise in that we separate the function from the entity performing the function.
Okay. Any other comments at this stage? Maybe it would be a useful idea for us to have a break for about 15 minutes, and while we're on the break, each of us consider coming up with what would satisfy us, and let's see if we can, or if you want to work as twos or threes or something, but come up with a couple of statements, one to cover what the contractor situation might be, and the other what the function of IANA might be. Would that be a reasonable idea?
Well, I think it'd be a bit of a time sink, but let me explain. I think that the only way this is going to work is if you take our document and you do a search for all the occurrence of square brackets, and you see how it would read if you substituted one or the other. Because in some circumstances, when you talk about the IANA, you're talking about the current body that is doing the job, as in the current body that is doing the job can't arbitrarily do X, Y, and Z. In other circumstances, you're interpreting the principles behind the thing, and you're talking about the function or the role itself rather than the body that happens to be doing it right now. So I think you need to look at where the square brackets are and see what we need to put.
Can we do that then?
Okay.
Well, I propose we have a 15-minute break, but we continue twisting our minds over these issues and thinking them through individually, collectively, and seeing if we and Bernie can find the document, and we'll work on that basis. Everhard.
Just for the record, if you work during a break, it's not a break.
I'm referring to the concept of going offline and not recording the conversation any further.
This is not something that, if we agree on the principle that we need to separate entity from function, we go through it, and how we do it in the end, I'm not going to be difficult on that one. As long as we agree that we need to, let's first have a look how much work it is and what it comes up. If it's not necessary, then we don't have to argue about it. If we find that all reference in the text are uncontroversial, then we don't have to argue about it.
Okay. Well, you can use your break to find caffeine or other things if you so choose. Okay. I'll say we'll reconvene at 10:30.
That gives me a chance to get coffee myself.
Okay. Thank you. The meeting is adjourned until 10:30. Thank you. We're back in recording, so I'll call us back to order, and we are now into part two of the Framework of Interpretation Working Group meeting, and we seem to be having a debate.
Yes, okay. We've got a slight technical problem here. I'll deal with it in the next one.
Okay, Gabby, is there anyone outside of this room on the Adobe Bridge? Oh, okay. And we'll, for the purpose of completeness, we'll take a moment or two just to load the document into Adobe Connect as well. And just attending to this, in a couple of items of did anyone have any issues with the timetable? Did they look? Are they happy? And also for those observers in the room, since we probably will finish ahead of time, if there are questions of us from the observers, we'd probably be quite happy to take them at the very end of the meeting. Okay, are we ready to rock and roll?
A minute, almost delivered.
There we go. Okay, so we have now the document on the Adobe Connect room and on screen, and over to you, Bernie.
Thank you, sir. This is from the analysis document, which is the document we've been working from and reached agreement on. So I thought we should start with this. In my mind, at least here, we're strictly referring to RFC 1591. If we look at Section 5.1 here, formal actions, we currently have it as the IANA contractor because as a group we decided that wherever we saw IANA, we had to replace it with IANA contractor square bracket. So here it reads formal actions by IANA contractor. RFC 1591 identifies three formal mechanisms available to the IANA contractor: delegation, transfer, or revocation. Other formal mechanisms may be available to the stakeholder community under applicable domestic law. However, those mechanisms might not be available to the IANA contractor as a practical matter. Now, on the first part, obviously, if we're only referring to as it applies in 1591, then to me, it probably makes sense to only refer to it as the IANA. And it might even be applicable in the bottom half. We're just looking at what's in RFC 1591. The difference, which is something I was discussing with Keith earlier, is if we're making recommendations to the current entity at the end of our document, which is beyond interpreting RFC 1591, then yes, I understand we're talking to the IANA contractor. And I don't have a problem with that, and we should define that term. So I sort of see both ways around it, and we can go through the document and see all the sections. The next one is right below it, 513. The working group interprets the term revocation to refer to the process by which the IANA contractor rescinds responsibility for management of a CCTLD from an incumbent manager. And basically, to my mind, we're just interpreting 1591, and therefore that could be the IANA, and that would be okay. So in my mind, at least, I understand the difference when we're talking to the IANA today and the contractor and making recommendations versus interpreting RFC 1591. Sir, I believe Nigel has a comment.
Just very quickly, just following on from what you've said, in 5.1, formal action might not be available to the IANA contractor as a practical matter. So you're talking about whoever's currently doing the IANA function would have to go and do something somewhere, somehow, is what that sentence is referring to. So as you said, I don't have an issue with that being the contractor or the operator or some such phrase. 5.1.3, this is more interpreting the legislation, as it were. So IANA function would be kind of okay there. I'm not going to die the death over which specific words we use, but like Evard, I think we should be precise. This is just a suggested nudge. It's not I'm not standing on a ditch here. Or even staring a metaphor.
Okay. Any other comments concerning this 5.1 to 5.13? It seems to me the IANA is consistent. Okay. Martin.
I think I can see where you're coming from. Sorry, Martin Bourne.
Just for a sec, to help maybe the discussion. Here we've got 5221. The IANA contractor has not publicly stated the standard by which it will evaluate or not the manager is doing a satisfactory job of operating the DNS service. In this case, we're referring to the current case, not interpreting RFC 1591. So I would see the IANA contractor here being the proper term. In the previous one, like 513, in the previous one, we were just interpreting 1591, and therefore that's just the IANA. So that's just to sort of set the two apart, so we're talking about the same thing. I'm sorry, Martin. Thank you very much for allowing that.
No, if you're right, and that is actually what I thought you were doing. But my concern comes down to the clarity of the information to the reader, who might then quite justifiably argue or ask, why are we referring to the IANA here, and then all of a sudden we're referring to the IANA contractor? It is essentially the same thing, just that it has become a different regime in which the organization works. So again, I would have thought that consistency through the documents, I still think that writing a definition that is the IANA, and by the IANA we mean the organization that is running that function, and then we don't have to worry about people thinking, why is it the IANA here, but it's actually the IANA contractor there, when it seems to be doing the same thing, because in 5.1, this is all about the doing role of the contractor, the operator, call them what you will. I think we probably do a disservice to comprehension if we do confuse people like that. But as other people have said, I really don't see dying in the ditch over this one.
Okay. I have a slight issue with what you're suggesting. I think there's three aspects to what we might mean when we talk about IANA. One is the authority of IANA. The other is the contractor who currently does it. And the third is the database itself. And I think they are discrete and different pieces. I think our job is to provide the colour and depth, and our hope is that future reports from IANA will utilise the glossary that we produce so that everybody has the same understanding of the same use of the term as it is used. So I think in actual fact it is more than just what this working group feels explains the terms of what we're discussing. It is the ongoing methodology from the point of the adoption of the framework. So, I think it does need perhaps to have more clarity around those discrete parts. And then if you agree that there's three parts, then you probably need a fourth term to say, when all these three parts are together, it is this. So,
Anyway, Martin.
Martin Boyle. I see what you're saying, but the authority is operated by the contractor. The database is the output. And if we're referring to the database, I think we do need to be quite clear that we're referring to the database. The dividing line between the authority and the person who's operating the authority seems to me to be very, very pedantic in that if we are separating it, then only the contractor can take the form can take formal actions. You know, it's as simple as that. And that's why I still think I would prefer to say, and I wouldn't be unnecessarily unhappy about us saying the IANA through the documents, so long as we've actually defined what the IANA is, so that people can then say, right, okay, we now know what that context is. The logical question, though, is between 5.1 and 5.2, why are you using the one in one case and the other in the other case? And I'm not sure it is at all clear in that at all, bearing in mind we're interpreting RSC 1591. But as I say, I'm really not going to die in the ditch over this one.
This is exactly correct. There's some actions that only the IANA functions contractor manager, whatever entity we call it, can take. Nobody else. And that is exactly my point. They do this on contract to the U.S. government at the time. I don't foresee that this will ever change, but we must be very, again, precise. But there is some actions that only this entity can take. Nobody else on earth can take this entity.
Okay, that in that case, when we're looking at 5.2.2.1, it is deliberative action taken by the contractor, so that's definitively different than the use of the term the IANA as quoted out of 1591. So I can see we need two terms, and one is called the IANA and the other is called the IANA contractor. And I guess in the glossary, if you have the IANA, you differentiate contractor with a small c or contractor with a big c as a separate term of art for that. Nigel.
I'm sorry, it's something you just said. Plain English says you just write it with a small c. No reason for capitalizing it. So it's the IANA contractor, the IANA small f function. I think the IANA on its own is a little bit ambiguous, but there's no need to sort of elevate things by putting capital. I know it's a habit, but.
But I'm suggesting that we deliberatively do that to so that it's not confused like the IANA contractor, but you're using the separate term included in the glossary that says the IANA contractor, and that's why you would capitalise it, you know, as a vehicle. Well, it saves the ambiguity over saying the IANA contractor, or the IANA does this. You know, it's not confusable with the other term called the IANA. Benny, and then Bert.
What's your part?
It's, if you define it in the in say all the terms in say that what we define in glossary, why not capitalize them? Because then you know they are defined, and you find and you don't have to do it in the document. That's a ordinary way of working.
Bernie, then
the small issue I find with that is that IANA and ITAN are always capitalized.
there. We're talking about the capital C on contractor, not IANA capital O. Ben.
I'm just trying to work my way through. Personally, I'm perfectly happy with Martin's point of view of, you know, if we define it clearly as the head of the document, what we mean by this, and that within the document it refers to two different things. If we're strictly interpreting RFC 1591, it's the IANA, and if we're making recommendations, it's the part that we're trying to be clear of and how they join up, then we can just use the IANA throughout the document, and I think we've explained ourselves what we're trying to do. But, you know, I'm just trying to find a way that we can walk our way through this.
Okay. Is there some comfort with where we've got to? Can we look at the next iteration and see when it next appears? Would appear to me to be an appropriate VIANA. Wouldn't it? Anyone disputing that that's a different nuance there? Shall we go look for the next one? That's it. Go back up a couple of lines.
Yes.
Thanks. What do people think about that? The FOI working group interprets this requirement to mean that the manager must confirm that and the IANA contractor must be able to validate. It seems to be a case of the contractor being not an unreasonable term, Nigel.
I think this is actually one of these edge cases. This is six of one and half a dozen of the other. We are interpreting the document, and we're doing it by reference to something that the contractor might or might have to do in the current circumstances. There's probably language we can use to clarify that. I'm concerned that we don't use the word contractor to imply that 1591 is talking about contractors. If we can get around that, I'm happy. Can't hear.
Vicky.
I mean, what about something like the IANA services provider or the IANA provider? I mean, what you're...
The person what is currently doing at the moment.
Well, I mean, what you're talking about is a reference to a particular form of an arrangement, of relationship between IANA and entity performing the function, as I understand it.
Well, that's how I read what's on the screen.
Well, I'm not seeing anyone sort of going to lose sleep over this so far, and it's, you know, reasonable, consistent use. I could live with the IANA everywhere we've looked at so far if I had to as well. Can we keep going? I'll just spin through and see. Let's see if there's anything that pops out that's horrible.
Yeah.
there. Okay.
It looks like it's in the same league of definition to me. Not hearing any dispute, Abraham.
I think I've mentioned this before. There is no space between the closing square brackets.
Yeah.
So if you use a find and replace throughout, you should first put in a space. Otherwise, you will put two words together and then you get spelling errors.
Yeah. Noted. No issues of substance here. Moving right along.
Just as I happen to notice it, are we going to be removing Canadian-British spelling from this? I regret that we'd have to, but I suspect we're going to have to.
What on earth is Canadian-British spelling?
An extra or a not omitted. Okay, good.
So we're using we agree on using British spellings throughout all our documents. I don't know, we just need to define, because we just need to make sure that we agree on that we don't have inconsistencies. I like to be consistent here.
I'm not sure what British language is either, but I thought we were using English, and there's only one version of that language.
We're talking spelling checkers, dictionaries for the spelling checkers, which one we apply to writing the document.
Particular one that we still use a lot is misbehavior.
British English, Canadian English, English USA, New Zealand English, there's each a different spelling checker.
And I do know and understand
it. I know that, but if I review the document and I apply this autocorrect, and it will autocorrect it, and then it creates problems when I send it back, we must all agree that we all use the same spelling checker. That's my point.
I'm pretty sure my one says English English. So.
Okay, but there is no dictionary for English English.
Queen's English.
UK.
UK.
Yeah, and Microsoft Word. Probably just English brackets UK, which, okay, that's the agreed standard. Okay.
Agreed UK English, yeah.
Jesus, okay.
I don't have to reprogram my brain now then.
Fair enough. Okay, can we, I think this looks the same. It looks to me like gives the IANA the ability to step in. Looks appropriate to me. Can we move to the next one? Nobody wants to discuss. Now here we have is it the same use of the same term? Anyone going to dispute this as a different nuance?
I see American misbehavior.
Yes.
Well, the Americans are always misbehaving.
We've got an IANA function contractor.
Get that one through. The IANA and the CCTLD manager shall advise each other. Seems entirely consistent with what we're looking at. And then again, it's in 3.3. To require the IANA.
There is an inconsistency here. That sometimes you're saying IANA contractor and sometimes you're saying IANA function contractor.
Yes. They noticed it.
Yep. And So that IANA function contractor seems to be able to be replaced by the IANA. So deleting the function contractor seems appropriate to me.
It's the entity. It's not a function, it's the entity. These two entities must agree.
Yes. So the IANA and the CCTLD manager should advise each other.
Have we agreed now that we use the word IANA for IANA contract for the entity?
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying.
Have we? I wasn't aware that we agreed on that.
Oh, no, we haven't agreed. But the proposition as we're reading is whether there is an inconsistency between using the IANA as in 1591 and the IANA contractor.
Here it must be the contractor, I think.
No. I'd be happy with the contract here if the word function wasn't there in the same case.
It's not the word, it's the entity that must be, not the function.
So
IANA is the function, and we have been using IANA contractor, IANA function contractor for the entity. For the avoidance of doubt, here it's not the function, here it's the entity that must be here.
So just for the purposes of clarity, this is the first time in this document that you've perceived this is the time that we would use IANA contractor as opposed to the IANA.
And agreeing with Eberhardt in that respect, the reason that that's the case here is that this is us making a recommendation based on our interpretation. We're not interpreting the thing which says the legislation says IANA. We are saying whoever's currently doing this job and the manager must agree, etc., etc., or should. So it's kind of appropriate here.
I feel uniquely qualified to provide insight on the intent here because I propose the language. It's the entity, not the function, that I wanted to mention there.
Okay. So thus far, if we use the IANA everywhere else, and at this point we use the IANA contractor, we're happy with that use. Nobody's arguing. Kim wants to add a point. Kim.
Well, I restate my concerns about the word contractor, operator, manager, service provider, whatever, but contractor presupposes the kind of oversight.
Okay. What's your preference?
Operator is what was used in the last IANA contract, so notwithstanding any other suggestions, that sounds fine to me.
I think we put in a footnote throughout this document, we refer to the entity performing the IANA function as the IANA operator, and we perform to the IANA function as the IANA. I can look at that very nicely.
Okay.
Good. I can work with that.
Martin?
Yeah, I'm happy to take Eberhard's suggestion. I don't like the terminology that Kim's come up with. It seems to me that if we need to future-proof it, then we should be talking about it in slightly more careful terms, rather than looking back at terminology that is not currently in use. But as I say, I'm quite happy with Eberhardt's interpretation of the language.
Okay, so I'm picturing the glossary description of the word the IANA operator as being something along the lines of that contracted party as per the current contract between NTIA and ICANN for the operation of the IANA.
I'm beginning to like it even more because it is a term that is not really in use in current usage. So if we define it what we mean and then we use it throughout, there is no doubt what we mean. There's no possibility for confusion.
Sounding like we have a reasonably strong consensus around the table on that. I'm not seeing any disagreement. We must be getting somewhere towards the end of the document too. Ben, is there any further instances?
Well, it's right below it. There's an IANA contractor.
Okay.
Well, look, I wonder if we've actually gone far enough into the document. Do you want to keep iterating through, or do you think we've covered off enough instances?
So
I think we come up with the solution to it, so we don't have to go through a document. Bernie is perfectly capable of putting the right thing at the right place.
Yeah.
Well, I think if it comes back to Bernie, Becky and I to do a find, replace and finesse, and if there is anything that remains difficult, well, we'll put it back to the group with marked up text for each instance, and we can cover it.
And you send it marked up to the list anyway, so
yeah.
Everybody can go through and provide correction if necessary, so
okay.
We'll get it done.
Okay, I think we have a way forward.
Okay,
brilliant. Okay, so on that note, I think our work here is done. Unless anyone has anything more on the topic of the IANA contractor, the IANA, we're happy. Is there any other business that we haven't otherwise covered off? That any problems anywhere, any other issues, any questions from the observers? If not, I'll declare the meeting closed and thank you all for your participation and attendance. And this is on the record. Eberhard.
You've forgotten to ask for questions from the public.
I did.
He did. Oh, I didn't hear that.
You just weren't listening.
I just want to be sure that I've got this all under control.
Okay, I'll declare the meeting closed. Thank you all.